from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. In the first half of Forum, tomorrow is Judgment Day for Johannes Meserle. The former BART police officer convicted of involuntary manslaughter will be sentenced for killing the unarmed Oscar Grant at the Fruitvale BART station. The sentence could be anything from probation to 14 years in prison. What's a fair punishment? Then, voters have spoken on public employee pensions, but what are they saying? And how will Governor-elect Jerry Brown and organized labor deal with the growing problems around funding retirement plans? We'll take your calls and comments on Forum, and we'll get started right after this. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer in today for Michael Krasny. Well, tomorrow in Los Angeles, former BART police officer Johannes Meserle is expected to be sentenced in the shooting death of an unarmed 22-year-old Oscar Grant early New Year's Day 2009. Meserle was convicted of involuntary manslaughter by a Los Angeles jury in July with a sentence enhancement for using a gun. Now, Superior Court Judge Robert Perry can sentence him to anything from probation to a maximum of 14 years in prison. And as I'm sure you remember, Meserle is white. His victim, of course, was African-American, which adds a racial charge to this case. And in this half hour, we're going to examine all the sentencing options and everything in between and the question of what would be a just outcome in this case. Joining us, Lori Levinson, criminal law professor at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles. Good morning, Professor Levinson.
Good to be with you.
Also with me here in the studio, Paul Rosinski, a reporter, a courts reporter with the Oakland Tribune. Good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us by phone from Oakland is Cephas Johnson, Oscar Grant's uncle. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
Thanks. Let me begin with you, Professor Levinson. How tough a call is this for the judge?
There are lots of tough issues right now for Judge Perry in this case. They range from the sentencing options to a motion for a new trial that Meserle has filed that has really a knotty issue in it. We have an odd verdict in this case. The prosecution wanted a murder conviction. The jury rejected that. They came back with involuntary manslaughter, which means sort of an accidental negligent homicide. But the jury also found that it was true that there should be this gun enhancement. And actually, it's the gun enhancement that poses the longest sentence right now for Meserle. So the first thing that Judge Perry has to sort out is, do the verdicts make sense, and are they supported by the evidence and the instructions in this case? And after that, then he has to figure out what the right sentence would be. And again, when you have a law enforcement officer and yet you have the public cry that we have in this case, it's not going to be an easy call. Either way he goes, I think he's going to take, you know, some criticism in the public press.
Based on what you've seen during the trial and the way he conducted the trial and what happened immediately after the sentence, or of the verdict rather, what do you expect will happen? What's his frame of mind, the judge, going into this tomorrow?
Well, I've known Judge Perry an awful long time. I actually worked with him when we were federal prosecutors together. He's a terrific judge. He's really smart, and he's really fair, and he's generally very law and order, you know, directed. In other words, he will follow the law, whatever it is. But he also has a lot of courage. So I think if he thinks that this enhancement doesn't make sense, given the instruction, given the verdict sheet, he may actually either toss it or grant the new trial on it. I don't think it's likely he's going to give straight probation to Meserle. He doesn't have to, for one reason. You know, Meserle's been in custody, and if he gives a rather short type of sentence, 3 to 4 years, Meserle will do some prison time, but it won't be the end of his life. That's an option I think the judge will look at.
And Professor Levinson, you said at the beginning this was an odd verdict because not only was he found not guilty of murder, but there was also the gun enhancement. What makes that odd?
Well, you know, what's odd is that the gun enhancement says that you have to have the intentional use of the firearm. On the other hand, the verdict may suggest that the jury didn't think that this was an intentional shooting. We don't really know because our rules of procedure don't allow us to bring in the jurors and say, hey, how did you reach your verdict? So we're all kind of guessing here. And the prosecutors filed some good papers that said there's a consistent way to look at these verdicts. gun enhancement should apply to bad cops as well. But then the defense filed a motion saying, you know, that's not what this law is supposed to be. And this is the tail wagging the dog. He gets the very lowest level of homicide. You shouldn't hammer him with a gun enhancement that's meant more for gang members than it is for police officers who are required to carry a gun.
And Paul Rosinski, you covered this trial from the beginning. Based on what you've seen, what do you expect the judge will do?
I would guess that he would go somewhere in the middle. The fact that he, after the verdict, immediately remanded Meserly and put him in L.A. County Jail, I think was a sign that eventually down the road he intended to keep him in prison for a little bit. I do not think, in talking to Ms. Levinson and several other professors and lawyers, they say they don't. They very highly doubt that he'll get the maximum time.
And Professor Levinson, as a judge considers a sentence and all the different factors, they have to look at mitigating and aggravating factors. Can you describe what that means and what those are in this case?
Sure. Under our court rules, the judge looks at not only the background of the crime and what happened in the crime, but the background of the defendant as well. Whether he has a prior criminal record, and of course, Meserly does not. Whether the aggravated nature of the crime, and this is a pretty aggravated crime, a man was shot in the back while he was on the ground under arrest. Whether Meserly was a ringleader in this, they will look at mitigating factors. Has he lived a good life? Does he have a family? Has he shown remorse? Now, that's been a big issue in this case, but his lawyer filed a declaration that said the reason he hasn't been out there saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, is that we advised him not to. But he did do acts of compassion even at the time of the shooting. He said to the victim, you know, you'll be all right, so that should be considered remorse. In other words, the judge has the right and should look at everything, the impact on the community, the impact on Meserly, what happened in these cases, and whether Meserly really is a danger to society if he gets out.
Paul Rosinski, one of the things that's going to happen in that L.A. courtroom tomorrow is that Johannes Meserly and Oscar Grant's family get to make statements. What do you expect that's going to be like in terms of the emotional impact?
Oh, I think that it's probably going to be more emotional than the trial was. The victim impact statements are usually the most emotional part of any proceeding, and I expect both families, I expect both of them to let it all out. Meserly's family was completely distraught after the verdict, as was Grant's family, so I think it's going to be really emotional.
Cephas Johnson, let me bring you into this. I'm sure you've given a lot of thought, you and your family, to what you're going to say. What's going through your mind?
Well, first, I'd like to respond to, I believe it was the attorney that had addressed earlier, and that is that the mitigating factors, you know, Meserly is a criminal. He has been arrested. You know, that's in the documents, the motions itself. You can read that in the transcript. So there's no dispute about that. However, the jury was not privy to that information. Meserly has been in confrontations with African-American males before, four of them to be exact. You know, again, the jury was denied the right to know. You know, Meserly beat up an African-American male 45 days before he killed Oscar, and yet the jury was not allowed to know. On that platform, the only person that said that he had any form of remorse was Meserly himself. Meserly thought Oscar was going for a gun. That was his statement. It's in the transcript. He is the only one that stated that he said, hang in there, Oscar. So if you look at the video, Meserly shot Oscar in the back. Oscar turned to him and said, you shot me. You shot me. Then Meserly turned Oscar back on his stomach, put his knee in his back, and handcuffed him. Not only that, he lifts Oscar up to allow smoke and blood to come from his chest where Jackie Bryson Jr. had to see that. You know, and yet Meserly's been on Bay Area TV for the last week, and not once has he apologized to the family or showed any remorse. The letter that he wrote to the public was not to the family, and here he was expressing his sorriness for what he had did. But not once has he approached the family or written to the family or stated to the family that he is sorry and remorseful for what he did.
All right,
had he been truly sorry on that night that the shooting took place or the day after, he would announce that he was sorry for what he did.
All right, let me just bring Paul Brzezinski into this. That notion of a criminal background for Johannes Mezeli, could you talk about that a little bit?
Just this past week in a kind of last salvo between the defense and the prosecution filed a paper. I guess they found that when Mezeli was 16 years old, he was arrested for shoplifting a $45 video game from Target. I talked to some people real quick, and they said that probably won't really have an impact at all.
Yeah. And Lori Levinson, these very emotional statements, although they're cathartic and very emotional, do they have any impact on the judge?
Well, I think that they have an impact on the judge. I think that the judge will have a very good idea of what type of sentence he's going to impose before he hears the statements. But the judge very much does want to hear from the family and have the family have an opportunity to speak. Ultimately, do I think it will dramatically change the sentence in this case? I don't think so, because the judge has received hundreds of pages of sentencing memoranda from both sides. The judge heard the trial, and the judge is a very feeling person. He knows how devastating this was. There's just no way to even sort of put into words how devastating this must have been. So I think he sees the family's opportunity to speak as an opportunity for them to share for everyone, not just with him, how they have felt about this case.
Lori Levinson, law professor at Loyola Law School. We're talking about tomorrow's sentencing of Johannes Mezeli with her and Paul Brzezinski, a court reporter for the Oakland Tribune, and Cephas Johnson, Oscar Grant's uncle. We're going to split this hour, so we're going to open the lines now to callers. If you want to join this conversation, give us a ring at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. Cephas Johnson, obviously you and your family are hoping for the maximum sentence in this case. That's certainly understandable. Do you feel that justice could be served with anything less?
Definitely not less than 14 years. And though 14 years is not enough, it will bring, maybe not so much for my sister Wanda, some satisfaction, but it will bring a partial satisfaction to me in the respect that, the justice system has been applying two different laws to black and brown men, and then a law specifically for police officers. And it's been totally unjustly in the way that it's been applied. So, yes. Accountability is really significant, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to the judge making the decision on how many years he should serve. The family wish, the community wish, and all who've seen that crime on the platform wish that Mezeli gets 14 years maximum. That will show the community that some form of justice works when it comes to people of color.
Do you have any empathy for either Mezeli or his family in terms of what they've gone through?
You know, if he had apologized the night he did the murder, or maybe the day after, or maybe after he had got up on that witness stand and began to cry and looked at the family and said that he was sorry, he's remorseful, or even when KTVU Rita Williams put him on television to allow him to speak to the community, had he had stated that I am so sorry for what I did to the Grant family, and showed some remorse, and maybe even drop some fake tears, then maybe, and only maybe, then I might can say that I might have some empathy for him. But at this moment in time, there has been no remorse on his part. No weight stated to the family at any time in the last 2 years. So how can I have empathy for him? If he serves 14 years and he wants to speak to the family, I will have plenty of empathy for him at that time.
All right. Let's go to the phones now. Tom is on the line in Oakland. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to speculate if the jury's decision to have this gun enhancement would seem a little strange to legal experts, but perhaps can we see this as a way of the jury saying that this focus on Mezeli, this might be the wrong trial, that the real focus should be on the whole police system itself, with the use of the kind of tools officers are given and in a bad situation.
Lori Levinson, any thoughts about that?
Well, I think that's an overall legitimate concern about, police conduct, but I don't think it's likely that that was the jury's message. And the reason I say that is that this was sort of almost an afterthought by the jury. They came back with a, they had their initial verdict of involuntary manslaughter, and then sort of at the last minute they had questions about what this enhancement was. There hadn't been much discussion about it, and also jurors are generally instructed that when they reach verdicts, they're not supposed to decide these big social issues. They're supposed to decide what happened in this case.
All juries do.
Very, the other part is a very important social discussion. It's just not what a criminal prosecution is about.
Well, there's also the issue of taser, use of taser. I mean, Messerly says he thought he was grabbing his taser. Have you heard of any changes that are happening in police departments in terms of training or, you know, use of these weapons, the tasers, that is, to eliminate that confusion?
Oh, yes. I mean, this case has gotten the notice of not only the BART department, but other departments as well. I mean, it's terrible. This is not the only shooting that has resulted from what people say was the mistake. That's Messerly's story, that a mistake in thinking he was drawing his taser. We have at least 6 or 7 prior incidents where somebody's been shot because the officer was confused, he says, in pulling what he thought was the taser. And this is a huge problem. A lot of people think of a taser as being something that looks like your garage door opener, but that's not the case. The type of tasers that they've been using look much more like guns, and if they're not trained properly, you can have these horrific accidents occur. They should not be happening.
All right, Tom, thanks very much for the call. Let's go now to Michael, who's on the line in Salinas, I believe. Good morning. Michael, are you there? Well, Michael is not there, apparently. Let's let him go. Paul Brzezinski, how is Oakland preparing for these verdicts? We, of course, in the past, we've seen violence as a result of the sentence, or rather of the verdict and the crime itself. How is the city preparing?
From what I hear, the police are preparing the same way they did for the verdict, and they've been keeping track of social media networks and various online sites and chats and kind of in the community. And from what I hear, they don't there's no ramp up as there was for the verdict so far.
But. And Cephas Johnson, is your family encouraging the community to do one thing or another?
Well, you know, this needs to be redirected back to KTVU Channel 2, Rita Williams. She excited. She caused outrage in the community right before sentencing. She's got anger in that community by advertising and allowing a convicted murderer, a killer, one that has been charged with a felony, to have a right to have used the media as a form to touch the judge heart.
And we should just, you know, say, just in case anybody is not aware, Channel 2, KTVU, Rita Williams, their court reporter, got an exclusive interview with Messerly about a week ago and aired it with great fanfare. And it was the first time that people had a chance to hear from Messerly. And Lori Levinson, what impact do you think, if any, something like that has, not just on the community, but on the judge? I mean, I would imagine, I mean, that interview is on the KTVU website. I imagine the judge has looked at it, wouldn't you?
Well, I don't know that the judge has looked at it unless it's been made part of the record. The judge is supposed to look at what's presented to him in court and not just what's buzzing out there in the media. You know, I think for the judge, he understands both sides. He understands that Messerly desperately wants him to believe how, you know, sorry he really is, but he also understands the family's perspective, which is this too little too late? I think ultimately his decision is going to be based a lot more on just what happened here, as opposed to all the buzz in the media about what this could mean or what the psychological impacts are. He wants to know, was this really an intentional crime or, you know, an ill-trained bad cop who made a terrible mistake?
All right. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Clint is on the line in San Bruno. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I want to give my heartfelt condolences to Oscar Grant's family, and thank you all for having this discussion at this point in time. It's an emotional thing, and it's difficult for me to make this comment without my, you know, my outrage showing through. But I've been trained in the use of deadly weapons and permitted to carry a deadly weapon in lawful use. It is true that many people have been shot, and the claim has been by law enforcement that they were reaching for their taser. The fundamental difference in some of those shootings, as opposed to a man lying prostrate and visibly subdued on the BART platform being shot in the back point blank, is that tasers can be employed from a distance. And in those accidental shootings, typically they are in excess of 6 feet. This young man was shot point blank at less than 3 feet. And it's very difficult to employ a firearm in that circumstance. And you're actually trained not to use a firearm in that circumstance. And so I just don't buy. Those of us who are professionals just don't buy this argument of the taser.
Lori Levinson, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Clint.
No, I thank you. I'll take your comments off there.
All right. Thanks so much. Yeah, Lori Levinson. That
exact argument was raised by the prosecution during the trial. So the jury heard that exact argument, which is, if he really thought he was going for his taser, he wouldn't have been as close and right up against him. And, you know, it was the jury who evidently didn't buy as much that particular argument. I think they bought more the defense argument that, you know, given the lack of training, given the fast-developing situation, given that Messerly really didn't have his head together, that's the defense theory, that it might make sense that he would think he's drawing his taser in either situation. But certainly, the argument the caller just made is an important one, and it was made during the trial.
We have a comment from a listener, DK Maxwell, who writes, does anyone think this would be an issue if it was not videotaped? The cops would have got together and buried it, taking care of one of their own, and the kid would have died in vain. Lori Levinson, no question that very little happens anymore in our culture without it being videotaped.
Well, you know, I go back all the way to the Rodney King case. I actually covered that case as a professor as well. And I think it's right. I think videotape and the public seeing what's going on is important. And sadly, you're right. These cases can get buried. But we do have the public watching. We have lots of eyes on the situation. We had a lot of people in that BART station at the time. And so police officers now do realize that they're in the spotlight. I also think that there are probably some better people and more diverse group of people going into law enforcement, and that can make a difference as well. Do we still have bad cops? Unquestionably. Do we still need to have a spotlight on it? Absolutely, yes. But the ultimate solution is to have the right people being the police officers.
All right, let's go try to get another call in here. John in San Francisco, welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First, it goes without saying that we all have, you know, immense sympathy and condolence for the family. But Mr. Johnson, I am critical of your role, and I'd like to make two comments about that. First of all, before the jury received the court's instructions, you stood by John Burris outside the courtroom in the street and set forth matters which had been excluded from the jury's hearing. One can only assume you did that hoping that word of these excluded incidents would reach the jury.
And John, I'm sorry, we're short on time, so if you would just get to your second point, then we'll have Mr. Johnson respond.
We're a day away from possible rioting and unrest in Oakland, and it's not helpful to try to stir the community or anybody up, which is exactly what you're doing. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much for the call. Cephas Johnson, you want to respond to that quickly, please?
Of course I do. It should all be redirected again back to KTVU Channel 2, Rita Williams. She put on a murderer.
But the social unrest, the civic unrest that he's talking about happened long before that interview aired.
Well, that civic unrest, I was in L.A., so I have nothing to do with that. You know, I've been in L.A. every time the community spoke loudly about the outrage of this unjust system. And so I'm going to be in L.A. tomorrow. What has happened, we need to address what has happened.
All right. You know, we are really short on time, and I think we're going to this conversation will obviously continue. And Lori Levinson, very quickly, how quickly are we likely to get a sentence? Are we going to get it tomorrow?
Oh, I think that we're going to get it tomorrow, but I don't think it's going to happen first thing in the morning. This is going to be a very long, possibly all-day hearing.
All right. Lori Levinson from Loyola Law School, thanks to you. Thanks also to Paul Rosinski from the Oakland Tribune and Cephas Johnson, Oscar Grant's uncle. And coming up in our next half hour, we'll be talking about the looming battles over public employee pensions. Voters spoke on Tuesday. What did they say?